Welcome to another episode of the EFL Freeze the Crowd podcast. As ever, I'm joined by two of football's finest minds. Andy?
Yeah, great intro, thank you.
How you doing, all right? And Luke?
How are we, guys?
Yeah, not too bad, thanks, mate. In a week that has seen Sunderland appoint yet another manager, Southend look to improve their off-field situation, and of course, fans are back in the stadiums. Here we are to laugh our way through another week of EFL football.
Sometimes it may be good, sometimes it may be shit.
And on that, there's a mixed results for Coventry and Millwall this week.
Yeah, I guess I'll go first this week. Yeah, we've had a great week, to be honest. 4 points out of two games. Weekend's game's gone really well for us. Surprising how we've played, to be honest. We've come out and kind of out-fought Rotherham, which is something that I don't think their manager, Warne, was too impressed about. That's what he's built, really, over the last few years. A side that actually comes out to fight a little bit more, and we've played probably a couple of bigger men than normal and gone there and outfought them and taken our chances. We probably could have won by more, but yeah, three points is great for us. We're up to just two losses now in 23 games at St Andrews, which, considering it's a temporary home, is not too bad at all.
Yeah, it was about 20 minutes in and you were messaging us saying that Biamu was playing like a man possessed.
Well, he was. Yeah, he was on fire, to be honest. The link-up play between him and Walker was awesome this week. Both creating a goal for each other and both taking their goals really well. But it's just nice to see him scoring, to be honest. A player that's obviously had injuries, and I think we spoke about last week about how he's come from quite a low level and people question whether he could do it. So it's nice to see him scoring goals. Yeah, I'm hoping that we've got a little bit of a better run now. Obviously, had Derby in the midweek and got a late point there. And Rotherham again this weekend and managed to come away with 3 points. We actually played 9 out of the top 10 in the table in our first 15 games, so it wasn't the easiest start to a new division. So I'm hoping that maybe we can pick up a few more points in December. But yeah, I'll take where we are at the minute, to be honest.
A few weeks ago when Tranmere got their first win under interim manager Ian Dawes, you said, James, this might be a turning point for Tranmere, and I'm thinking that maybe it's a turning point for Coventry. I don't think they're going to go flying up the league, but in terms of, you know, escaping that gap at the bottom, I think this could be it.
Yeah, we've opened up quite a nice little gap now, to be honest. And with some really important games coming up, we've got Luton, who you'd think were kind of a team that we would like to try and get at least a point off in the midweek. So hopefully we can open that gap up a little bit, put some distance between us and the drop. It's just that issue with the penalties that we've got to deal with. Averaging about one every two games, which is not something that we can continue with if we're going to kind of move up the table.
7 penalties, is it now?
Yeah, 7 penalties. Not great from us. But I will admit there's been a few questionable ones in there. But I suppose when it gets to 7, you can't keep blaming the officials.
You can, and you will.
Definitely will. But yeah, at risk of rambling on too much about Coventry, Andy, did you want to have any input on your team this week?
Yeah, not the best week to be a Millwall fan, I don't think, for quite a few reasons. But I think we'll leave it for this week.
Yeah, probably for the best.
Where are you? Where are you? Let's be having you!
Well, moving on from the Coventry and Millwall games this week, and on to kind of the games that we had a bit of a closer look at. Luke, do you want to start us off?
Well, from one Delia failed sing-along to another, Delia started to entertain the 2000 at Carrow Road with a little sing-song. Not sure how well it went down, but I'm sure they'll just be happy to be back in the stadium. They hosted Pulis' Sheffield Wednesday side, who are looking to turn around their fortunes because things are not going well for a very unhappy Pulis at the moment. It seemed to be quite even early on, and Stiepenman had to clear one off the line from a Wednesday corner, and then both had their chances quite early on, but got to 0-0 at still half time, and it all kind of happened in the second half because Adam Reach whipped a beautiful ball over to Josh Windass, who headed in from close range, and Adam Reach was causing problems with his long balls all day long.
Yeah, well, Josh Windass redeeming himself from that red card, perhaps, there.
That kung fu
kick. First game back after that, yeah. Flying kick.
Yeah, I've spoken to a few Wednesday fans recently, and talking of Adam Reach, they've got this weird kind of thought on him. He's the kind of player that turns up one in sort of five games. Great player when he's on it, and then when he's not, doesn't really do much. They all seem to feel like he only ever scores if it's a screamer, or he only ever kind of whips in one good ball and then disappears for a few weeks. So I think they'd like to see him do a little bit more under Pulis.
Yeah, he's known for scoring screamers, isn't he? But Pulis has obviously identified him as someone who can deliver a good ball as well. And you think under a Pulis-style team, he's going to be a key man for the rest of the season.
Yeah, well, he's always firing the ball just Adam Reach. Yeah, that one's poor.
I did not see that coming.
No. Neither did the keeper. Anyway.
Oh, dear. Yeah, it was another one of his balls that caused a problem. Because he played it over to Harris, who it was the biggest penalty shout of the game, and there wasn't one. And it's a definite penalty. He's just been bundled over when he's through on goal, and the referee's just given nothing. I don't know if he's watching a different game to us, but it's stonewall, absolute stonewall.
Yeah, I mean, they're getting worse every week, aren't they? There's a lot of complaints about officials at the moment, and as someone who's witnessed quite a few dodgy penalties, I'm with you here. That's the definite penalty for Wednesday there.
Same thing for the second. Harris in behind the defence again, and he's just... It's a little less clear-cut because the defender gets something on it, but it's still, he's just been taken down. If the first one isn't a penalty, then the second one should be.
Yeah, to say that Pulis was far from pleased would be an understatement as well, considering what happened.
I don't know if you're talking generally there or about the game.
And then Norwich, obviously, doing what they've done quite a lot this season, scoring some late goals.
Yeah, Josh Martin came on for Stieperman and made quite an instant impact. Scored his first goal in English football. Vrančić played a really nice ball through. Vrančić hasn't got a lot of game time this season so far because he's getting his opportunity because of injuries. And he's played a really nice ball through to Josh Martin, who just pokes it through and equalises.
Yeah, it's been a difficult couple of weeks for Norwich, I think, recently with all their injuries, something like 12 injuries. And they've obviously only picked up a point against Coventry and then lost to Luton, I think it was, in the midweek. I suppose they'll be pleased to turn things back around and get 3 points, but hopefully looking to get some of those players back fit again.
Yeah, and talking about turning things round, Max Aaron's bit of a wavy run on the right-hand side quite late on. Plays a really nice one too with Vrančić, who backheels it to him again, and he smashes it into the far corner, and they've taken it. And they had chances for more late on, but they were happy to run it into the corner and just take a 2-1 win.
Good week for them. And I think a few fans will be pleased to see Aaron's involved in a goal because they've been a bit worried about the start he's made this season after, obviously, all the talk about him over the summer window.
Yeah, Daniel Farker said after the match that, it was really difficult to create chances against Wednesday. Like, they had 19 shots. They clearly didn't find it that hard, but easier than other teams have fared against Pulis's Wednesday so far at creating chances. And Pulis had two things to say after the match. One of them was, the players aren't used to winning and they're not used to trying hard. So he's just slating his players even more at the moment.
He's very much in the honeymoon phase where he can blame the previous managers, isn't he? We'll see how long he's doing that for.
Yeah, and I think he's also obviously setting himself up really for the transfer window already. Sort of putting it in there that the team aren't good enough. So stick your hand in your pocket, owner. You know, one of them really.
Norwich back to the top of the table after Bournemouth's 4-0 win in the midweek, so yeah, they'll be happy.
I've worked, Dad, so I'm gonna play hard, baby.
And much like at Norwich, we were treated to 2,000 fans at the new Brentford Community Stadium, the first time those fans were able to get a look at their new ground. They were treated to 4 goals and a red card. Unfortunately, not 3 points for the Brentford fans, though. And not the best start for them as well. Joe Rothwell scoring one of the goals of the week, in my opinion. Maybe we'll get to that one later. And a dodgy penalty as well for Ivan Toney to convert. which saw Dara Lenehan be shown a second yellow card. So it was all action in the first half an hour or so.
Yeah, another dodgy penalty again, that one, and really harsh red, surely.
Yeah, I think it's one of those ones where he's sort of given Tony a little tug in the box, but I don't think it's enough for a penalty, or especially a second yellow card. And you thought Brentford would go on and win it from there, but Blackburn had different ideas.
Maybe the penalty, the first bit of evidence that the fans can do something on match day, or...
Yeah, it did seem like a home decision, didn't it? The fans get straight back in the ground and the referee gives them a soft one to ease them back into it.
Yeah, breaks under the pressure.
Obviously put Ivan Toney back joint with Adam Armstrong, who he was playing against that day, at the top of the goal scoring rankings.
Yeah, both on 14 for the season so far, and it looks like if he can avoid injury, he'll be on for like a good at least 25 goals. And Brentford are quite used to creating 25 goal a season strikers in recent years, because they've had Andre Gray, Neil Maupay and Ollie Watkins all reach that landmark, and it looks like they're going to create another one in Ivan Toney.
Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it? It's a weird one for me, because I think realistically he should have been signed at least a season ago. The evidence has been there that he's a great forward. I suppose it's just that teams weren't willing to A, meet the fee that Peterborough wanted for him, and B, I suppose never proved at a championship level. But you're just talking about Armstrong and Toney there. Newcastle must be sitting there wondering what the hell they've done letting both of those players go.
But they brought in Joel Linton.
Yeah, good point. Well made. If the Rothwell goal was good, wasn't the only good goal of the game though, was it? Brentford actually scored a good goal themselves, didn't they?
Yeah, Sergi Kanyos has made it 2-1 to Brentford just after a pretty clear penalty decision wasn't given their way after Sam Gallagher handballed in the box. So probably evened it out after the soft one to start. But yeah, Kanyos cuts inside, looks like he's going to curl it, but then just smashes it into the top corner. Another contender for goal of the week. And then obviously from there, you're expecting Brentford to go on and win the game pretty comfortably. But in the 87th minute, Jacob Davenport, his first ever EFL goal. What a time to get it. Absolutely terrible bit of defending from Brentford, trying to clear it about three times. Falls to him, little deflection, and it's in. And he did absolutely love it.
Yeah, I bet he did. But when you're down to 10 men and you've just rescued a point away at Brentford, you're with the home fans in there as well. You might as well give it to them, eh?
Yeah, I don't know if he gave it to them, but he did. He did enjoy the goal. Yeah, really entertaining first glimpse at the new stadium for Brentford fans there. They'll be really disappointed not to get all 3 points.
Yeah, you still got to think they'll build from it and obviously sort of finish up there this year. Well, out of the Championship and down into League Two, I was actually looking at the Cheltenham Exeter game. On paper, it looked like it had the makings of an absolute classic. And the scoreline says that it was. I'm not going to go into the goals too much, because even though there was quite a few of them, none of them were actually any good. Quite a lot of scrappy goals and obviously a penalty. But yeah, I think it was more just about the fact that it was two teams who struggled to defend more than anything. I think Exeter still look a little bit like they've kind of got a hangover from last year's disappointment in the playoffs. And Cheltenham are on fire. So I think the fans being back has obviously boosted them a little bit as well. And there were some questionable shouts early on when they've conceded from a dodgy bit of defending. The goalkeeper rolls it out to his defender and he kicks it straight to an Exeter player, 1-0. And the first thing you hear from the fans is, "Oh, for God's sake." Some bloke next to the camera obviously just shouting. So welcome back. But they obviously turn it around and go on to score 5 and put on a show for their fans coming back. One thing I do want to say is this long throw from Ben Toza has really started to become something that they're making the most of. Another goal from a long throw again this week, and there was one in the midweek for Cheltenham as well. So something that the fans are obviously getting buzzing about, hoping that they win throw-ins at the moment. Not many fans around the country doing that at the minute. But looking lethal, to be honest, from the long throws and 5 goals in front of the fans.
Yeah, bringing back the old Pulis days.
Well, yeah, I think I actually mentioned that on one of the other pods. So maybe Ben Toza might be Pulis' first signing in January.
Definitely.
Yeah.
I think it was goal number 6 that they've made from throw-ins, from his throw-ins this season. He actually got accredited for the assist on this one because it went, you know, headed straight into the net.
Did he? Yeah, well, yeah, it was only a couple of yards out by the time it actually got into the box, and he's just nodded it in there. There's a few questionable bits of defending in this game. No one's really got onto that one, and I'm not sure where the goalkeeper's gone. But, yeah, I mean, the long throw really is a weapon for them at the minute.
But, Exeter are a really good attacking side. Like, some of the players they have going forward, like in Ryan Bowman and Matt Jay, Randall Williams and Joel Randall, like they've got goals in that team. And I saw some fans on Twitter just say about how they went for it. They were a bit gung-ho this week, and it just, they scored goals, as they always do. They're some of the biggest goal scorers in the EFL, but they just forgot how to defend, clearly.
Yeah, I think, to be honest, you've got to be disappointed if you go away, score 3 goals and don't win a game. That takes some doing, so fair play on that one. But yeah, I think you're right. It was just a case of actually they've struggled defensively. But to concede 5 is obviously frustrating for them. But yeah, I mean, 8 goals, 8 different goal scorers, fans back in, and a thriller for them. And yeah, that win takes Cheltenham a point off top, just behind Newport. And Exeter probably won't be too worried, sat in 5th, just 5 points behind Cheltenham with a long way to go. So 2 teams maybe to keep an eye out for this season. And as you say, both teams not struggling to score goals. Cheltenham on 13 and Exeter on 10 in terms of goal difference. So certainly 2 teams to keep our eye on this season.
Yeah, 2 of the most entertaining teams in the league, producing one of the most entertaining games of the season.
Come the chicks, come on! And with that, what better place to start our roundup this week than at Sunderland appointing yet another manager, but still getting similar results?
Yeah, good to see. I'm not sure how prepared Johnson was, having been being announced about 2 hours before kickoff, but then he still stood on the touchline.
Yeah, strange one, really, because you sort of think, why put the pressure on yourself to do it straight away? But I guess it's, you know, shows that he wants to get stuck in and take the role seriously. And
well, I think more likely that he thought it'll be an easy win, that one, and he can take the credit for it. And the opposite has happened. He's only conceded 1 shot on target.
I was going to say, it's not exactly for the want of trying. If you look at the stats there, absolutely peppered the Wigan goal. And lost 1-0. Up the ticks, come on.
Yeah, Sam Allardyce said he wouldn't have done that. He would have been sat in the stands making notes. Of course you wouldn't, Sam. In the stands
with
his
hip
wine.
Flask. Sorry, Sam.
Yeah, and in the midweek, there was some notable wins for teams like Luton at Norwich and Wimbledon managing to get a result against Peterborough. Mansfield obviously getting a win against tabletoppers Cambridge, and Preston also getting a really big win at Bournemouth, courtesy of a screamer from Scotty Sinclair. And then over the weekend, Cardiff continued their great run of late, managing to get another win. Bristol Rovers managing to get their first win under new manager Tisdale. And Portsmouth came away with a great win against promotion contenders Peterborough. There was plenty of goals in the Mansfield-Crawley game as well at 3-3. And another shocking one was that Walsall managed to actually win a game of football and beat Tranmere 3-1.
Yeah, Tranmere had won 5 in a row, and then Walsall, not on the best run of form, come and do that.
Yeah, I think Walsall have sort of been on the edge of that result for a little while maybe, and it might be just what they need to sort of kick on. So interesting one though, yeah. And obviously then you've got the crazy game at Bolton.
Yeah, did not see this coming. Port Vale have lost 5 in a row. Bolton have won 5 in a row. You think it's only going to end up one way. Port Vale score 6 for the first time in 33 years and completely shock Bolton, who just did not know how to defend. Ian Everett has called them in. He called them in for Sunday morning training at, like, I think it was 10 o'clock in the morning, because he spent all week talking about how they were going to go over the basics. They forgot all of the basics. They've conceded 6 at home to Port Vale, and he's called them in for early training. He's got to be fuming.
Jesus. He sort of comes across as a sort of guy who's not going to take much nonsense this year.
But he sprouts a lot of it.
Yeah, it did seem like the sort of thing I'd do on Football Manager after a loss. You know, get them into training the next day and let everyone know. Let the fans know.
Yeah. The another thing that stood out to me as well was obviously Shrewsbury. We mentioned last week bringing in Cottrell as manager and denied a win in his first game in the last minute. But then this week manages to actually rescue a point in the last minute. So 2 points gained across the two games, but in slightly different circumstances. But I'm sure Shrewsbury will look to improve on that under him now.
Yeah, we'll finish up with Southend, who have been voting to facilitate on the club's new stadium on Thursday, which is the 10th of December, subject to planning permission. It's a bit of an odd one with the club in such dire straits at the moment. If you're lingering at the bottom of the table and you're talking about getting a new stadium when you might not even be in the Football League next year, I wouldn't start building a conservatory if your living room's burning down.
And I will try to fix you.
We've had another email this week, this time from Zampa, saying, Zampa here, long-time listener, second-time emailer. He says, I find myself becoming a bit of an expert on Crewe Alexandra while listening to your podcast. Then he does go on to have a slight pop at Luke's analysis, or dodgy analysis, he calls it.
Justified.
Yeah, it's a bit, be constructive if you're going to email in, please. Then he says, goes on and says, anyway, I've been up to Gresty Road. Crewe is a strange place. My question for the panel is, what is the worst ground you have visited in the EFL and why? Any takers?
Well, first of all, it's good to have you back, Zampa. So cheers for the email. And fully agree on the Luke's dodgy analysis.
Yeah, something we can't get behind.
Yeah, yeah. I think I've got a few honourable mentions for this one. A few that really leap out at me. A couple of years back, I went to Swindon Town for the first game of the season and arrived thinking that Coventry would get a win, walk home with 3 points. Well, not walk home, it's quite a way, but go home with 3 points and enjoy my evening. Safe to say that didn't happen and I've lost my head a little bit that day. But back to the stadium. If any of you have been to Swindon and had to sit in that away end, which doesn't even have a roof, and as a burger van for the half-time, snacks and drinks, it's not my favourite ground. And then really to top it all off, just before kickoff, they decide to wheel out the mascot and get him to do some sort of horrible, horrible haka just before they kick off. A painful day out. So that's an honourable mention from me.
That was dreadful. I went to that one with you. So I've had my go around the magic roundabout in Swindon, which is right next to the stadium, which can only make it worse. And it's just a bunch of steps. There's nothing else. No stand over the top of it. It's just a bunch of steps and that's it. The away stand.
Yeah, I can imagine Coventry probably take more fans to Swindon than Millwall do, because I think I've only had the pleasure of sitting in that bit behind the goal once. We've normally been chucked right in the top corner, which safely to say it's not the best view.
Yeah, they gave us both that day, and at the start of the game some of our fans were giving us a bit of stick for being stuck when it started raining, which was probably the most entertaining part of the game, to be honest. Either that or getting stuck on that stupid roundabout.
Yeah, if you're picking a game where I think it's been sort of skewed, hasn't it? Because you've had Luke stood next to you for the game, so it's always going to seem a bit worse, isn't it?
He's probably given it some dodgy stats information while I'm trying to just focus on the game. And yeah, it didn't end well that day, and Luke unfortunately had to witness me losing my head.
Took the brunt of it on the way home.
Yeah, fairly silent drive home that day. I've got another honourable mention, and it's Oxford. Now, I think something that frustrates me about all stadiums, and yes, I'm well aware that I'm sat here supporting a team that doesn't currently have one, but something that frustrates me is when they obviously drop these stadiums out of town and it just makes your day out a little bit harder. You want to go in down there and have a laugh before the game, but you have to take yourself outside of the city to a Hollywood Bowl centre where the stadium's been plonked. And the thing that's actually annoys me the most about the Oxford situation is that one end behind the goal, I think, doesn't even have a stand. So A, you can lose the ball, and B, you get this sort of tin pot feel when you look to your right and realise that there's some bloke stood on a box watching the game for free. So that's definitely an honourable mention for me.
Someone boot it into your back garden, you've got to go get it back from some old bloke.
Unfortunately, if they boot it over the back garden, it's more likely to end up in aisle 5 of the bowling alley. So,
strike, yeah. Yeah, I think it depends on what sort of ground you're going for here, because you've got the terrible grounds for lower league clubs who haven't got the money. Visiting Yeovil Town when they were in the EFL a few times was always a bit different. You've got, I think we'll all agree on Bristol Rovers as well, playing at that little rugby ground.
Yeah, I'm going to be honest and say I think that you've read my mind a little bit there. I think they're actually going to be my suggestion for the worst ground. That away end is, I can only describe it as a gazebo with some sewage pipes running below you. Not my favourite day out. What I do like about that is the kind of pre-match, you can walk up the roads around the ground and sit in a few pubs and sort of soak up the atmosphere. But once you get there, the stench alone is enough for me to nominate this as mine. But yeah, I just don't like it. I don't like the gazebo.
Yeah, I think you've touched on something that's going to make me choose Reading as one of my worst grounds as well. You want a ground sort of walkable from a train station. Reading, you've got to jump on a bus from the train station or get a taxi far out of the city. And then you turn up and it's just, you know, a soulless bowl, isn't it? I don't think I've ever heard an atmosphere there. The ground's far too big for them. It does remind me of the Rico in its pomp. But
you've took the words out of my mouth there, although I'm not sure the Rico ever had a pomp. But yeah.
Pomp.
Yeah, it was a bit of a weird one. I don't know if you watched the early kickoff on Saturday. It was Reading with fans back. It sounded exactly the same as it did last week.
Nah, too easy.
But no, sorry, that's being harsh to the Reading fans. But like you say, it is soulless. It's hard to create any atmosphere in somewhere like that. I know that well enough, having been to the Rico too many times. Yeah, that does annoy me, the transport between the train or whatever to get to the ground. It sort of kills that atmosphere that you've built up on the train, or if you take a win and you're trying to head back to the train station and you've all got to go separately in Ubers or whatever, by the time you get to the station, you just can't be bothered anymore.
Yeah, I only had an honourable mention, not because of the club at all, but because of the ground. The comparison for Oakwell, Barnsley Stadium, is it just seems like a post-apocalyptic Craven Cottage. It's not even that bad a stadium. It just seems like no one's been in Craven Cottage for about 30 years.
Again, I was with you on that trip when you've had the pleasure of coming to another football match with me there at Oakwell.
Yeah, do you just go together, you two?
No. He says that knowing full well he's been to many games with me. That was an odd one, that Oakwell trip. I'm going to give an honourable mention to the bloke in front of us who sat and decided to watch the game on Sky instead of just looking at it 30 yards in front of him.
And the guy behind us who tried to create about 7 different chants, none of which worked.
Yes. Yeah, he tried to rhyme something with Sweden. Didn't work.
Yeah, I think I'm going to have to pick one that, you know, I've been there a lot of times and it's the ground that I've had the worst times in. So it's the Den.
The Den, yeah.
The Den it is. 3-0 to the
Just
Den.
Just knew that was coming. Yeah.
No, I think Bristol Rovers has got to top it for me.
Yeah, just, what you know,
they're a big enough club to make a nicer stadium than that. They've just settled with that rugby ground, haven't they? Which they now don't even play rugby in, do they?
At least they don't play the Wurzels before kickoff.
No, that's something, yeah.
First ground I ever went to, and it's all been uphill from there.
Yeah, well, you can't really get much further down. Maybe try Yeovil if they ever get back into the EFL.
I hope that answers your question, Zampa. He does end the email by saying Merry Millmas, Zampa.
Not much merry in the current mill situation, but again,
but lots of mass. And so if you'd like to email in any questions, it's threesacrowdpod@outlook.com.
And he's got to go to Middlesbrough and get something. And I'll tell you, honestly, I will love it if we beat them. Love it.
Well, it's time for our goals of the week. And after I've won a few times with a few dodgy EFL classics, and Andy's managed to take a win last week with a Troy Deeney penalty, I'm sure Luke will love it if he could actually win one this week. Not going to happen. What we got then, boys?
You never know. I mean, we could literally make sure it doesn't happen because there's only three of us.
We could literally ever know. But what have we got then?
Go on, Luke, entertain us.
Right. I've gone for a player, a midfielder who's banging form at the moment. Portsmouth midfielder, Tom Naylor. The ball is just passed across to the middle of the field. He just lets it roll across him. It reminds me of the old jumpers for goalposts where the ball would roll across and you'd have to click it at the right
like
time.
That. It was like that.
He was far better than me, though.
Zampa's question your analysis, but I think you've put him right back in his place with that there. That was perfect.
Yeah, because everyone's played jumpers for goalposts. If they went to school in the last 15 years.
Yeah, it just rolls across him, and it's just that he was a lot better at that game than me, clearly, because he just thumps it into the top corner from what I can only assume is 25 to 30 yards. It's an absolute rocket, and it brought me back to not doing any work in year 7 IT.
If that doesn't deserve to win, I don't know what does.
Well, you say that, but I question it. There's an angle of this shot on one of the replays where you realise actually the goalkeeper can get something on it, to be honest. Now, granted, he's absolutely leathered it and it's hit the back of a net at quite a speed. But if maybe Pim didn't have such short hands or arms, he might be able to get something on it. I think he does even touch it. Maybe I'm being harsh.
From one angle, it definitely doesn't look like he's getting there, but if you say so from that second angle.
Ooh. And I do.
If you say so. He's starting to get a little bit defensive over his pick there, isn't he? Because he hasn't won before. If you say so.
Andy, what you brought to a table then? A bundle, a penalty? What we got this week?
There were so many good goals, it does seem harsh.
Oh no, he's brought an actual good goal, hasn't he?
Yeah, I think I have, yeah. Well, what I consider a good goal, and what I hope you two do too. It's got to be Joe Rothwell, Blackburn at Brentford. I briefly mentioned it earlier. Picks the ball up about 40 yards out, just glides past two or three players and then just curls it into the near post. I mean, you rarely see one of those curls into the near post and it just looks brilliant on the camera.
God, he's built his case well. Rarely see those curling at the near post. And I've got to agree with him. You can't even argue with it. You just don't.
Yeah, and it was just like it didn't look like something out of a 2D video game as well. They looked like a, like a real girl.
Well, points off then.
Yeah, well, I do agree he's glided past a couple of players and then he has tucked it well. If he's gliding past a few players you wanted, then look no further than Carlton Morris this weekend. He's picked the ball up not 40 yards out, but around the halfway line.
But more.
Why do 40 when you can have 45? He's picked the ball up, took it past a few players, and I know what you're going to say about the finish, but to be able to find the back of the net after taking it past that many players keeps his composure. I've got to say, that's my goal of the week, Carlton Morris for MK Dons.
Yeah, it's an incredible run, isn't it? But you know, there is one angle.
Yeah, it's savable, but that's not why you've picked it.
No, that's not why I've picked it. You're right. So, A, I haven't picked it because it's not savable. B, I haven't picked it because it looks like something out of a video game. B, I haven't picked it because it's something that rarely happens, although it is. It's a great goal for me. Look, to have the confidence to take on that many players and then still get a shot away. Case built for me.
Oh, this one's a bit closer than normal.
Yeah, this is a difficult one, isn't it? I don't see any of us giving up our goals.
As a three-time winner, and you've put forward a good point that actually it's kind of squirmed into the net, I'll concede mine this week. But I've just got to say who I'm going to vote for.
Yeah, I think, you know, if Joe Rothwell's gone past three players and then curled it in from, let's face it, a similar distance from Naylor's, and Naylor's just hit it and hoped.
And if you put on top of that that I would have to vote for Luke, yeah, I think you might have won. Oh, but there is something in that. There is something in that jumpers for goalposts comparison that I can't let go. I'm going with Nailers. It was against the opposition that they needed 3 points against.
Yes.
Jumpers for goalposts. So I'm going in with Nailers. In a close second, Rothwell wins.
And what better way to end that podcast?
Well, I think really, boys, all that leaves me to do is say cheers for joining me, and I'll see you next week.
See you next week.
See you next Monday.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the EFL Freezer Crowd podcast. As ever, I'm joined by football's... No.
Football's Andrew Hayden. I'm joined by football's Andrew Hayden. Yeah, good to hear. Okay, I've forgotten the guy's name. Flores, wasn't it? Swansea. That was Sam Allardyce. Cut that. It's because he was on Quest this week, wasn't it?
Damn Sam Allardyce. Jesus.
Okay, that is terrible. That's just nothing, isn't it? That's just nothing.
What's an intro? God.
Let me go again. Okay, let me go again.
That was the worst piece of shit ever.
The thing is, I almost carried on. I went, no.
Oh, dear. Oh, my God. You've gone. You've literally gone.